Good morning. We're coming rapidly to the end of our annual gospel reading cycle on Mark. This is the last of the readings from the public ministry. Next week, we have one reading from that sermon on the coming of the kingdom, and then the feast of Christ the King, and then the year is over. So we're coming to the end. And Mark, who's been a very careful literary architect all the way through, is very aware of that and has an interesting structure here to set up this story. Not that it really needs it. The story is pretty dramatic in itself. It's been a favorite of artists over the centuries. Suits it very well, you know. The opulence of the temple, the grandeur of the treasury, the poverty of the widow, Jesus and one of the disciples on one side, the scribes on the other. It just calls out for a nice Renaissance painting, and it got a lot of them. It's also very easy to imagine. You don't need to be a Renaissance artist. You can imagine it all in your mind. Take one position or another as you see it through. And it has a dramatic detail that makes it really a challenge. She put in two coins. I mean, if you don't have any money, that's simple. It's a no-brainer. You've got nothing to give. If you've got one coin, that's a challenge. Do I contribute it? Or do I buy dinner with it? Do I throw it into the box? Or do I eat? But if I've got two coins, that's simple. You know, one for me, one for God. I throw one into the box, I use the other for dinner. Which is what makes it so dramatic. She doesn't do that. She doesn't do the simple thing. She doesn't do the obvious thing. She throws them both into the box. That's a challenge. It was a challenge to the disciples when Jesus pointed it out to them. It was a challenge to Mark's community when he wrote it. It's a challenge to us today. But with his literary architecture, he takes this story, as powerful as it is, and sets it up for an even greater resonance. This is, what do we know about this woman? She's a woman. She's poor. She's a widow. She's anonymous, and we're not ever told her name. Who else do we know in the gospel who fits that description? Anybody? Way back in chapter 1, Peter's mother-in-law. She's anonymous. We get Peter's name. We never get her name. She's obviously a woman. She's a widow and poor because she's living with her son-in-law. She wasn't a widow. She'd be living with her husband. If she had any money, she'd be living by herself. No woman voluntarily moves into her son-in-law's house. She's perfect parallel. And what do we know about her? She's sick. Jesus comes, cures her, and she gets up and begins, it says in the text, to wait on them. And that's where people today go, whoa, wait a minute. Isn't this sort of patriarchal in the extreme? Woman's just up off the sick bed and you expected to serve dinner to this bunch of men? Point, though, with these two stories, the way Mark has them framed back into the center of his own story. It disappears a little bit in the English, but it's clearer in the Greek. Remember that the great central section in Mark that we were just finished reading a few weeks ago? Between the two cures of the blind man, you have the three acts, and in each three scenes, Jesus predicts the passion. The apostles do something incredibly stupid that totally misses the point, and then Jesus teaches some more. And the last one, chapter 10, that's all there is. The others are used as a Christmas tree, and some ornaments are hung on it, so you have to look for the structure. But in chapter 10, Act 3 goes straight through. You get the prediction, the third prediction of the Passion. James and John arguing about which one of them is greatest. The disciples, the other 10, arguing about who are they, who do they think they are. And Jesus says, whoa, stop it. You're missing the point completely. And he tells them, well, talks to them a little bit, and then you get the line at the end, 10:45. I tell you, the Son of Man has come not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for the many. Now, came to serve. In Greek, that's exactly the same word that's used of Peter's mother-in-law. She served them. She deaconed them, diakonein. And here, to give his life as a ransom for the many, she gave all that she had, her whole life. Now, most translations would say all that she had to live on or her whole livelihood. But actually, the Greek word is the word life. Livelihood is like the fourth meaning in Greek. So they'll understand what it means, but the resonance is still to life. She gives her life as Jesus gives his life. From the very beginning to the very end, chapter 1 to chapter 12, beginning and end of the public ministry, they both focus back into this statement of the theme of the whole gospel at the end of chapter 10. This is who Jesus is. The disciples never catch on. Even by the end of the gospel, they haven't caught on. Obviously, they catch on afterwards. Mark deliberately has an after story. I mean, it ends with the women living in the tomb, and they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Well, obviously, it didn't end there, or we wouldn't be hearing this story, right? But you're invited in. What happens after the gospel? What happens after the gospel must include the disciples finally getting it, or we wouldn't be here. But all the way through the gospel, they don't get it. But these two women get it. Poor, elderly, widowed women. Marginalized about as far as you can be marginalized in the social structure of the day. But they get it. They understand who Jesus is. They understand what Jesus does. And Mark holds them up as examples to all the rest of us, whether we're male or female, whether we have a spouse or are widowed, whether we're rich or poor. All of us are expected to get it, to live it out, to hear not only who Jesus is, but who we can be. And like Peter's mother-in-law, like this widow here at the end of chapter 12, like Jesus himself, to come to serve, not to be served, and to give our lives as a ransom for the many. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.